This is Metro Talk with Jerry Phillips, your Sunday morning community radio magazine, bringing communities and people together.
Well, I tell you one thing, if you've been listening to us all morning, you have got to be fulfilled with those statues of our community, educators, lawyers, and now the politicians. My goodness, I'm going crazy. The politicians are on deck, and it's first Sunday roundtable, first Sunday political debate. We have a lot of issues to get to. Let me start off with my good friend, Nicholas Sawalk, libertarian.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning. What about President George Bush meeting with Tony Blair this week, Prime Minister of Britain? Mr. Tony Blair has just won an election, reelected, and he's coming to Washington with two things on the plate. One, more aid for Africa, and global warming.
I think that it's... Those are interesting priorities. I thought there was a war on, but I'm sure that global warming is very important and not quite as important as maybe domestic issues or the war in Iraq. But
Eric Nicholson, Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele says he's tired of being second man in Annapolis. He's ready to move on now and take on the United States Senate. But then again, he has to take on Kwasi Mfume plus Cardin of Baltimore County and a few other names that will be thrown in the hat before the year is out.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, the Maryland Republican Party certainly likes to show Michael Steele off whenever they can, and he's gotten around on the publicity
circuit. Well, they sent him to the Vatican for,
Right, right. But, of course, I think we also need to remember, he wasn't actually elected. Bob Ehrlich was elected, and Michael Steele was his running mate, but he didn't have to run independently for that lieutenant governor spot. And so I think there's some question as to whether he really has the experience necessary to hold a U.S. Senate position. And you look at people like Ben Cardin and some of the other folks who have considerable experience in the Congress and who may well be better served or better serve Maryland there.
Jim Pomeroy, Republican. Jim, Bill Clinton says that he has his eyes on the United Nations. I don't know if that's to be the Secretary General or to be a representative of the United States.
I don't even know.
Why do you like that one?
For TV, you could watch me just smile and laugh. It is an amusing idea, but I doubt President Bush will support that bid.
Well, President Bush, you says President Bush will have to support
it. If the country does not support their nominee, then it is unlikely that they would become Secretary General.
Right. Okay. Whew. Anyway, let's turn to the Democrat. Patrice?
Well, I think Bill Clinton certainly has.
I wasn't going to ask you about Bill Clinton. You're not going to run with that. You know what I mean? Those Democrats, I'm not going to give you that.
You've got what it takes, Jerry. They love him in Europe.
In the district? Who? Democrats?
Democrats love him in the States, and he's loved around the world.
Like Tony Blair's over here.
He's got the charisma to do it.
They're big fans of Jerry Lewis.
If I knew a bunch of Democrats would be in my state, I'd leave too. By George. Okay, Patrice. Mayor Anthony Williams hasn't said yet whether he is or he's not going to run for mayor, although he feels that he should win and, baseball and all that. He feels, although people who support baseball don't live in the city anyway. But he does have one person who is up against him, and that's Adrian Fenty, who's very strong, young man, 35 years old or 34, out of Ward 4. And he bumped one of the biggest politicians, Charlene Drew Jarvis. Won Ward 4, got reelected, and now he says he wants to be mayor.
I'm glad we finally have one candidate for mayor in the District of Columbia.
Oh, you got a lot of candidates for mayor.
He's the only one that's officially announced his candidacy. Everybody else is kind of fooling around with their exploratory committees. Anthony Williams won't step in and say whether he's running or not. I'm glad we've got one candidate, Jerry.
How does he stand?
Adrian Fenty?
Yeah.
I think he's got a good chance. He's well-liked. He's competent. He's strong. Yeah. Anthony Williams better look out.
Ladies and gentlemen, independent Emily Loeffler, I will not ask her a question. I'll just let her throw in what she wants to talk about.
Well, I also think that Adrian Fenty has a great chance, and I think that Anthony Williams may have shot himself in the foot as far as district residents are concerned with the baseball thing. And Adrian Fenty has a really strong backing in this city, both in and outside his ward.
Panelists, let's turn to Iraq. Iraq is being talked about by all means, I'm sure, Tony Blair and And President Bush will be talking about Iraq this week, although there are some...
In between global warming and African aid.
Right. The concern in Africa, there's a new government. It's been elected. It's been put in place. Now we find, according to the Washington Post this past week, some 12,000 Iraqis killed. We are finding so many Americans, 800, if one of the counts I got, have been killed. This is after they pulled down the statue and said, we're not having a war anymore.
Right.
And then we find now that the insurgents' violence has stepped up. I mean, really to the point that you're scared to walk out your front door, they say.
Okay, I have to call the president for probably the most ridiculous statement ever. When asked about the step up in violence since the Iraqi government was installed, his response was, well, obviously they're attacking because they're losing. They're fighting so hard because they're losing.
Actually, that's accurate. You watch the fluctuations in violence, and when were the fluctuations? Right before the handover, right before the elections. Typically, when we're doing well, they step up the violence to try to break our momentum. So actually, I thought it was pretty accurate statement.
We also said that they fight so hard because they're losing. I think it was an offensive, the Tet Offensive, in 60...
Right.
The
Tet Offensive, which the North Vietnamese lost dramatically. Thanks to the huge support from our media and from liberal politicians in the United States.
It's 2005. Can we discuss current issues, please?
Well, history might be a weak point for our liberals in the room.
Excuse me, Jim. Let's talk about the war in Iraq right now. The fact that the violence has escalated tremendously. The question is, how are we going to get out of this thing? A poll, and just on Meet the Press, which is on the air this morning right now, a poll showed on that show that, 40% are against or say that it's not worth it. Not
51%
against.
Say it's not worth it.
51% say it's not worth it. There are those who say that not only the war is not worth it, but what are we getting out of it?
You know, Jerry, I think it's an interesting statement about sort of where the mindset is. I also think it's a little disheartening to me to know that there were so many people who opposed this war before it even began, and to see these people who've sort of maybe, for lack of a better word, lost their nerve after we've gone in and said, well, you know, I supported it at first, but now I'm kind of changing my mind. It seems to me that people don't really understand the severity of the decision to go to war. If you're going, I mean, you don't sort of make that whimsically, and you don't support the president whimsically. If you're going to do it, you know, I just think it's really disappointing that that's occurred.
Patrice?
You're in a funny position once you go to war. It's a fine line, because if you oppose the war, as I clearly did and spoke out against it before we went in on this radio show, once we're in war, of course you want to support the troops. Otherwise, once again, you're called unpatriotic. You're not supporting the troops. Okay, but here we are. We're in Iraq. It was an irresponsible war. It was deceitful. It's incompetently executed. We've got 12,000 Iraqis dead. We've got, you know, hundreds of Americans, 12,000 Americans maimed, lives ruined. Okay, we've got a civil war that's continuing. It's the same war. The Sunnis are killing the Shiites. That hasn't stopped. That's what the basis of the insurgency is. The Sunnis are trying to get the Shiites out of there, except we're in the middle of it rather than Saddam Hussein.
Oh, hold on. That's not accurate at all. You have folks streaming in from Syria to try to form a revolution.
Yeah, and
the
Sunnis are underwriting them. The Sunnis are paying for the foreign insurgents to come in and destabilize the government.
Look, you've got an elected government. You've got a government that's moving forward in Iraq. And
what
despite,
government is that?
And the elected government, the elected
is it
government.
The Iraqi
what do you
government?
Call moving forward? We've got a situation that's more unstable than it was long before we went
in. Absolutely not. Well, you can have the stability of Saddam, but I'm not sure that's exactly what we want.
You've got a hotbed of terrorism in Iraq that you did not have before. Are you caring about the American people and our general security, or are you... Where do your interests lie?
Foreign policy is obviously a broad topic, and what we're doing now is we're winning in Iraq. We have won, winning in Afghanistan.
Who's winning? What are we winning?
Democracy is winning.
Are we winning? We've got a civil war there, an unstable government, a hotbed of terrorism. What are we winning?
And a huge deficit.
Hold it. Guys, this is the real world, folks.
It's the real world. We've got 12,000 Iraqis dead.
This is the real world. And when terrorists attack America, and when terrorists attack our forces in Iraq, when terrorists attack our forces in Afghanistan, despite the whinings of the Democratic Party, we have to go in there, and we have to defend our troops, our country and those who support democracy.
And there were no terrorists in Iraq until we allowed them in.
Absolutely.
And they had nothing to do with 9/11. This, I mean, this is, again, just...
So you might not care about terrorists that didn't actually commit 9/11 and give the rest of world terrorism a pass, but, you know, when we're fighting terrorism, you have to fight all of them, not just some.
Well, why don't we actually fight the ones that actually attacked us? Where are they?
Well, we're doing that, too, but you and the... Well, maybe not you, but the folks on the left, ANSWR and groups like that, don't want to fight any terrorism anywhere because they think that they are insurgents who are the moral equivalent of our founding fathers.
What kind of stuff is coming from the left, Jim?
What I'm pointing out is the left doesn't want to fight this war.
Excuse me, everybody. I have one war here, and that is to get to you, the public, to ask you to call this radio show if you have comments or questions with our panelists or politicians. Telephone number 301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. My lines are open. Still, the war causes much frustration and much concern because there are two sides of the fence. Are we still protecting against terrorists by being in Iraq with an unsettled situation? Nicholas Sawalk.
I want to echo Eric's point. The issue is that some people, before the war happened, thought ahead 2, 3, 4, 5 years out, what we would have to do to maintain and to eventually stabilize the situation. But the people who were most vocal in charging into war thought ahead about 6 months to, can we beat Saddam's army? Can we take over the country? But it's like a dog chasing a car. When you catch the car, now you're a dog on the bumper of a car, and it's moving pretty damn fast. The issue here is it is the Sunni versus Shia violence. There's a power vacuum there. The elections did happen, and I want democracy to work in Iraq. But if the Sunnis boycott the elections and they decide that the best place for them to get political power is by shooting people, it's not going to happen right away. Now, the Iraqi government's doing something good right now. They're talking to the Sunnis and trying to bring them into the political process. But one of the things that will help is we need to leave. We need to be out of there.
That's
because
my question. When are we going to leave?
We galvanize opposition. We provide a target and a catalyst to support terrorism. We need to not be there.
Nicholas, how long? How long? How long? I mean, we've heard from Rumsfeld on this, who has said 10 different things about leaving. I remember his talking about next 2 years. I hear those from the Pentagon saying maybe
they are
the next
all inaccurate, and they will all continue to be inaccurate because Rumsfeld has no policy.
Emily.
This is another thing where we continue to get conflicting information and deception from the administration. Last week you had Vice President Cheney on CNN saying, we're in the last throes of the insurgency and the military is going to be out. The violence will be over by the end of the year. But meanwhile, you had a congressional delegation in Iraq that was told by the Iraqi government and the Iraqi military that their military is not going to be ready to stand on its own for at least 2 more years.
Are we sending 40,000 more soldiers over? Eric?
Well, you know, with the recruiting problems and, you know, folks sort of reluctant to join the military at this point, I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not it's going to be easy to recruit those folks to do that.
Okay. Let's go to Brian in Edgewater. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Fine, my friend. Go right ahead.
Hey, I just turned on the radio station and heard you talking. You know, it is a fact that the left never wanted to fight this war. They didn't want to fight the war in Vietnam. They railroaded Richard Nixon out of office because he started bombing Cambodia. If we didn't bomb Cambodia, we never would have got as far in Vietnam as we did. But the left was hoping for a communist victory just to smear the Republicans. This war in Iraq is not going to be over anytime soon. George Bush said that. When are we going to leave? We're still in Germany and Europe from World War II. So when are we going to leave there? We're going to leave when all these radical Muslims are killed. That's when we're going to leave, plain and simple.
Okay, thank you very much, Brian. Let's talk to Joel in Stafford. Good morning, Joel.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Fine, thank you very much.
I just have a couple comments. I'm not really spun up on the whole politics of this war or what have you. I'm a retired service member, and as such, I took a job that allowed me to go to Iraq. I just recently returned 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what I can say is that I think that we need to really look at. I heard one of your panels, individuals say that if you don't say that you're for the war while the troops are there, then you're against the troops. But I think it's
go right. Are you still there? Okay, Joel. Yeah, Joel, I got you now. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, what I'm saying is I just recently returned from Iraq. I'm a retired military person.
Yeah, we heard that.
Oh, okay. And what I'm saying is that when these panels get on there and the left says, oh, you know, this is a wrong war, I think they really need to realize that it isn't. If you go back and even study our own history in this nation, we depended upon foreign countries to assist us in gaining our independence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have to do this. And I'll tell you, the passion that I see with the young Marines and the young soldiers over there fighting this war, I think they have a clearer understanding than a lot of the people sitting around your table there, sitting on the phones with you.
And that's understandable because they're right there on the front lines with it.
Well, you know, what I'm saying is they're seeing hardships and strife and death and destruction suffered upon them. And these young lads go out and they'll hand out candy and they'll hand out stuffed animals to these. They know how to win this war. And it's going to take the death of a few of Americans. And nobody's ever said that this country's going to go to war and not face that. You know, the problem is that these dying aren't the ones complaining. It seems to be everybody sitting back here in a comfortable desk, office, and home and going home on the weekends. I didn't hear a single Marine over there complaining about putting himself in harm's way for the Iraqis. And I'm really hard to understand is why are so many of these people who won't support this war complaining. They're
okay.
Not at risk at all.
Thank you, Joel.
Ask your panel that, please.
All right. You asked the panel. Let's get the results.
I think Pat Tillman's family was complaining about him being used as a poster boy after being killed by friendly fire. I think that the caller makes a good point. The men on the ground, the men and women on the ground, are doing a good job. But the policymakers need to make sure that they don't put them into harm's way for things that are not in our national interest, for things that are not planned out well enough that we can actually win. I admire the dedication. I have military in my family. I come from a military family. We've always had, as Americans, soldiers who are ready to fight and die for our values and for our country. The question is this our values? Is this our country? Is this our war?
Okay, let's talk to Jeff in Fairfax. Good morning, Jeff.
How you doing? I just had to bring up a point, and that was, even though we talk about we're providing democracy, I would say that we didn't go into it in the middle of a civil war to help one side, and yes, we did open up a whole can of worms with now one side that wants to support, I guess, by killing us and support. I guess what I really want to say is are we going to be able to get out of this thing?
Okay.
And we got 12,000 people who are maimed, and our government's not even helping our veterans that much that are hurt, and the families are taking up the burden now for these people.
Okay, thank you very much, my friend. He brings up an interesting. Let me ask you guys. I've forgotten. There's so much is going on. Did they ever clarify the National Guard's people, men and women, as veterans, that they can get veteran benefits?
Well, we're talking about the health benefits. Yeah,
right.
They get health benefits.
Not
while
only
they're,
health
while
benefits,
they're on, they get the health
death.
Benefits
but
regardless.
But also death.
They get. I'm
if
not
they,
sure exactly.
If they're killed in action, do they get the same benefits as regular full-time veterans? Of the armed services.
If they're killed in active duty, they get the same benefits as regular.
Okay. All right. 301-230-0980, #980 on Verizon Wireless System. Jim Pomeroy, I saw your hand, then I'll come to Emily.
Look, here's the thing. What you have in Iraq is, the fact is, Saddam Hussein was supporting terrorism around the world. What the left is upset about, or what the left is trying to attack this on, is they didn't really have a terrible problem with Saddam, and their argument is that Saddam didn't actually fund the 9/11 hijackers. No, he didn't fund the 9/11 hijackers. He, however, was funding terrorism around the world. He was supporting terrorism around the world. We went to Iraq to help stop terrorism around the war, around the world. This is a fairly simple concept, but a significant portion of the left desperately does not want us to win the war on terrorism. A significant portion of the left is sympathetic to those, to the terrorists and their supposed views.
You know who's funding terrorism around the world is Saudi Arabia. You know who's funding terrorism around the world is Iran, is Syria, is North Korea. Are we going to go against them? No.
Do you want to?
Jim, let me finish.
Would you support a war
the
in North Korea
is,
or any of those other places?
If the case was made that we could win, that we could go against them and that we could win with actual
if
evidence.
We're going to fight terrorism.
Yeah, and we're actually going to go against
Saudi
the people
Arabia's
that
been an
attacked
ally
us.
Of ours for,
Jim,
for a number of
Jim,
years.
Jim,
She has the floor.
Okay. Now, the point is, and our last caller brought this up, this war was sold to the American people not as a war of liberation, not as a, oh, look, foreign countries helped us get on our feet. Why don't we go help Iraq gain their independence and their democracy and sovereignty? This war was sold to the American people that Saddam Hussein could fire a missile to our country from Baghdad, that there were weapons of mass destruction. None of this has proven to be true.
Well, there were weapons of mass destruction. They were in the graves of all the Kurds.
The premise for this war has changed to make it more convenient for the administration.
Nicholas, you got 20 seconds.
There's a simpler thing that Jim needs to remember, and that is the reason that we didn't take out Saddam Hussein in 91 was not because we couldn't. It was because we didn't know how to put the country back together again when a power vacuum was created by toppling him. We didn't do it because it was bad policy then. It's still bad policy now, but we did it anyway.
9/11 happened.
Excuse me. I have to hear from the Democrat.
Jerry, we're going
to
be...
Do we really have to... No,
we're going
to
be in Iraq for a long time. We went into Iraq, and we built the largest, most expensive embassy that we have in the world. We're there, and we're going to be staying there.
Chelsea in Virginia, Northern Virginia, good morning.
Good morning. Actually, it's Kelsey, but...
Oh, it's Kelsey. I'm sorry.
I'm a retired service member, and I spent a bit of time in Operation Enduring Freedom, and I can tell you that I am a Democrat. But what I can tell you is this. We did go into this current conflict under the guise, deceptive as it may have been, to eliminate weapons of mass destruction. And that's fine, because allegedly there was evidence to support that. When that proved not to be the case, we then became liberators and the creators of democracy. Well, I can almost go for that, except for this. When candidate Bush ran in 2000, he stood on a promise, and his promise was this. One, I will not commit the nation's military to nation building. That is not what they are there for. Two, if I commit our forces in a foreign operation, I will not commit those forces without a clear and concise and defined exit strategy. Now, 9/11, yes, it did occur, but 9/11 wasn't created in Iraq. And the rest of the administration is still trying to say that we are doing great things there. I've spent 24 years of my life in the military, and I love my country, and I love the idea that we can have the debates that we're having on the air right now. Mm-hmm. Let's not get away from the fact that if Osama bin Laden had been apprehended and been presented to the American people, which is what they wanted, which is what everybody wanted, when that didn't happen, we had to find another body. We had to find something else that the American people would not find.
Kelsey, can you hold the line? Don't leave.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's get another listener on the line with you. Bill, am I right? Bill in Manassas. Good morning, Bill. Kelsey's on the line. You heard what he said. You heard the panelists. Let's get your input.
I agree with Kelsey on one thing. You know, I admire him for his service for the country. You know, it takes a special person to do that. You know, I have a friend whose brother is in military, and he's over in Iraq right now. And I talked to him online, and he was telling me that, you know, the soldiers that are over there, they are proud to be there. They see things that are never sent back here for the American public to see. Mm-hmm. You know, they see the kids and the people who have had no freedom, who have been shot down or beat down every chance they got. They're smiling. They're happy now. They have freedom. You know, they're able to do things they weren't able to do before. He said that's what makes it worthwhile for us being over there. You know, because under Saddam, you know, granted, maybe it was a little bit of a misleading facts going into the war.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a man who did need to go down, who needed to be brought out of power.
There's no doubt
anybody,
about that.
I mean, look at what he's done to his own country. It's obvious he did have weapons of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point, I don't know where they went. Nobody seems to know where they went. But he used them on his own country. I mean, look at the village that he bombed. Up north there, where it killed 200,000 people, you know, with gas. You know, that the man was crazy. We needed to go in there. We were asked to go in there. You know, and now these people have a lot more freedom than they've ever had in their lives.
Okay, Bill, thanks very much. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right, Kelsey, I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk to B in D.C. Good morning, B.
Morning. you know, I just keep listening to everyone saying, you know, we should go to war here and we should go to war there, and that everything is okay in Iraq. And the fact is, you know, the Lancet Medical Journal has said that 100,000 Iraqis have died as a consequence of the invasion. You have thousands of U.S. soldiers who were killed and maimed. Iraq had nothing to do with September 11th. Everyone in the United States was fed this lie about Iraq and Al-Qaeda and weapons of mass destruction. They went to war on the lie, and it's not a war that helps the people of the United States. It's a war that simply helps the oil companies and corporations.
Oh, come on.
Because Iraq has the second greatest oil reserves in the world. It is a strategic foothold in the Middle East. And the U.S. government has lied to the people in the past. They lied to the people about Vietnam. And people are fed up with this. They're going to be coming to Washington, D.C. on September 24th, and they're meeting at the White House, and there's going to be a huge demonstration. The people who want to participate in the demonstration to stop an illegal war, they can go to the AnswerCoalition.org website.
The AnswerCoalition.org website that supports the dictatorship of North Korea and that
it
supports terrorist
groups. Look at the website.
Yeah, I've been to the website. I've been to those rallies. I'll try to come by that rally on the 24th.
Right, conquer other people. The people of around the world are not the enemies of the people of the United States. And making enemies of people around the world by bombing and attacking and killing is not going to help anyone.
All our fault.
In the United States.
We are a bad country.
At the same time, while there are $270 million a day that is spent on the war in Iraq, 45 million people in the United States do not have health care. Our children are suffering in the schools that don't have
enough. Yes, we're a horrible, horrible nation.
You have endless money for the Pentagon, but you don't have money for human needs.
B, calm down, honey. Just land for a minute. Thank you very much for your call. Appreciate you. Got your point over. Thank you. Have a good day. Lucy in Alexandria, good morning.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say that the person who was on the panel who was talking behind B, that's a big problem when everyone doesn't get a fair opportunity to say what their opinion is without that type of interruption and running commentary.
It's called a debate.
Thank you. Just like that. Like,
yes, it's called a debate.
What I have to say in fair turn and order. However, what I would really like to say is that I think that if the policymakers, the people sitting behind their desks here, going home, as mentioned earlier, I'm not going to say whether I'm for or against or whether we should stay in Iraq. We're in Iraq, and we need to manage it and take care of it, and we need to be good citizens of the world, however that pans out. The policies, what drives the war, how we manage our time in Iraq as a country, how we use our resources to make the world a better place now that we're there. If the people in the policy-making decisions had sons and daughters, grandsons and granddaughters, nieces and nephews that were highly likely to be engaged, I think that should be their conscience, their guiding conscience when they make policies and allocate resources.
Okay.
That is not the case, but if it were, how would they make the policies? How would they choose? What would they do? And then maybe things could turn out really, really positively.
Thank you very much, Lucy. Appreciate your call. Thank you. Dan in Gaithersburg. Dan, you have about 20 seconds. Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to mention the fact that we as Americans complained when 9/11 came about the fact that the government didn't do anything to prevent this bad thing that happened here in the country. And now we're complaining because we're doing something. Yeah, some say that there are no hard facts that relate one thing to the other. But there is also, you have to take into consideration that there is no way of saying that this hasn't helped to prevent any other attacks in the country.
Okay, thank you very much, Dan. Appreciate your call. Well, now, let's turn to another issue, and this will take us definitely to the theme song. The statement is that Deep Throat's been discovered. Now we know who Deep Throat is. And there are those who say that he is one particular person, quote-unquote, called him a snake. And there are those who say he is a hero. I'll start with you, Jim Pomeroy.
Oh, there's
Deep Throat from the Nixon years. Nixon resigned. Deep Throat was giving information to the Washington Post reporters. He was number two man in the FBI. And Tricky Dick, quote unquote, was in office.
You know, what I find amazing is how many folks, we all care about this. We all were wondering, who Deep Throat was, but I'm amazed at how many folks look like, well, who cares? You know, it was ancient history. It's making me feel very old.
Well, it's opened the doors to a lot of revelations now, has it not, in government and wrongdoing?
I think that...
Very quickly, please.
Obviously, Mark Felt was not abiding by the duties that he had as an FBI agent, but he was revealing and keeping the focus on information that was important to the American people. And I think as more and more of these anonymously sourced stories come out, it's important to remember that sometimes you have to... It's not all black and white. Sometimes there's wrong and there's right, and you try and sort it out as best you can. I think that's what he did.
Yeah, I think, you know, reading... most of this happened before I was even born, but reading about, you know, sort of what was going on... really harkens back to a time when the FBI had a frightening amount of power. I mean, you know, in the waning days of J. Edgar Hoover and, you know, the White House spying on the FBI sort of spying on the White House. And that kind of abuse of power led to a lot of the reforms of the intelligence agencies in this country in the later 70s.
Yeah, I think he's a hero. He's an American hero. And he uncovered this culture of corruption that was growing. And the abuse of power that clearly the Nixon administration was engaged in, and I think that we owe a great deal of gratitude to him.
Emily.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, he did what he had to do for whatever his motivations were. I was listening to one of the folks indicted speaking on the radio the other day saying that, oh, he should have gone to the president, he should have gone to the head of the FBI, you know, he shouldn't have gone outside the agency or
naturally,
the administration. But these are the folks that were doing something wrong. So, you know, he did what he had to do.
What's funny about this story is, why is it the media is always putting people on the air, the criminals themselves,
yeah,
the ones, the felons that, you know, I heard G. Gordon Liddy the other day. I mean, come on, G. Gordon Liddy is, I mean, you know, he's a felon. Come on, he broke into an office. He broke the law.
Yeah, but so did Bill Clinton. Here, he lost his bar license, and you guys are backing him for Secretary General.
He wasn't
General.
Meddling with the monster.
He was breaking. Hold on, Bill Clinton was breaking federal sexual harassment civil rights laws.
I would like
he was willing and consensual, Jim.
This wasn't about Monica. This was about his abuse of other women.
Excuse me. You're stepping on the host's toes. I'd like to thank Nicholas Sawalk, our libertarian. You're a nice man.
Thank you, Jim.
I'd like to thank Jim. No, I'd like to thank Emily Leffler, the independent.
Thank you, Jerry.
I'd like to thank Eric Mickelson, who is the Green Party.
Thanks, Jerry.
Now, Patrice McKinney, Democrat.
Jerry, thank you.
When are you guys going to say something? What is Dean doing? What is Howard doing? Is he living?
Howard Dean is doing a great job. He's
like
out
what?
There. He is out there. Listen.
He is out there.
Look
at
Social Security.
Right,
Jenna. Hey, listen. Social Security roadshow is dead thanks to the Democrats. Come on. The Democrats uncovered that fraud early on, and we owe a great deal of thanks to Howard Dean.
Excuse me. And a few moderate Republicans. Jim Palmer, you got the
proposed?
Last word.
I'm concerned about Dr. Dean. From what he's been saying a lot of offensive things. He's been attacking a lot of hardworking Americans.
He might
bring
out the pickup truck again, for all I know.
They need to rein him in a little.
Thank you very much, everybody. Emily, you have 2 seconds.
You know, just one last
thing. 2 seconds.
All right, what have the Democrats proposed? What are they coming out
they
with? Something
nothing.
New.
They found a fraud.
Something
didn't
of their own. Not just fighting, putting down the Republic.
They're working on going to Mars. Thank you very much, everybody. Next week, folks, we have a very important program. Please give us your support. We'll be doing a live breakfast forum on violence. Stop the violence. We've got to do something about it. Be sure to join us. Tell a friend. And if you'd like to know more about it, give us a call at 301-230-3582. Or simply email metrotalkshow@msn.com. We want to hear from you. Thank you very much, Steve Solomon, technical producer, Carolina Restrepo, research, Shaheen, public affairs associate. I'm Jerry Phillips. So Metro Talk is a WBIG 100.3 FM and WPEM Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington. Have a good day, my friend. Love you. Peace. Bye.